Iqbal against Patel. Mr. Settle.
May it please the court. Your Honors, in 2009, the appellant in this case lost his gas station and convenience store in Fort Collins.
If you would raise your voice a little, it will help you. Don't move the microphone. Okay. That just records. You need to raise your voice enough to carry over the sound of the wonderful ceiling fans.
Thank you, Your Honor. In 2009, the appellant lost his gas station and convenience store in the foreclosure proceeding. And then about a year or two thereafter, he discovered that the individual who operated the gas station for him and the supplier of the gas were in collusion, and they committed a fraudulent scheme that led to the loss of his gas station. Now, he commenced an action in the district court. The district court found that, based on its interpretation of this court's prior decisions, that this court does not recognize fraud as an exception to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. And on that basis, he dismissed the case. Now, the district court relied mainly on two cases that I'd like to distinguish here.
I'd like to start you out in a different place, counsel. Okay. Which is the question whether the Rooker-Feldman doctrine is implicated at all. I don't think we can go around declaring exceptions to doctrines adopted by the Supreme Court. So I'm interested in whether this is within the scope of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. Is it possible for your client to prevail while the state judgments remain outstanding?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe so.
Explain how and what the damages would be if the state judgments remain standing.
The relief that he wants is the injury that he sustained as a result of the fraud. The injury that the fraud caused, Your Honor, was loss of his business, loss of his property, the equity they had in there, and a judgment that says to the operator of the business.
Yeah. How much of that is covered by the state judgments? You can't get damages caused by the state judgment. The question I'm asking, so that it's perfectly clear, is there any injury that your client is seeking recovery for that is independent of the state judgments? Injury he would have suffered even had he prevailed in the state cases?
Yes, Your Honor. And to be a little more specific, in the state case, what he lost was the equity that he had in the property. That's it. In the federal case, what he would have gained would be the entire injury of the loss of his business and potential future equity built in the property.
Would you agree that in seeking an order of possession for the gas station, he's seeking to have the federal court overturn the judgment of the state court? After all, I mean, the state court allowed the foreclosure and the sale of the property.
Yeah, that may be an argument that you may be correct there, but another relief is a monetary judgment against someone who committed fraud, committed a blatant scheme of fraud without the individual's knowledge.
And what's the measure of damages for that fraud injury?
Well, there's punitive damages and there's compensatory damages. The compensatory damages is the business that the plaintiff lost that could have gained from that point of the fraud, from the commencement of the fraud to the issuance of the judgment.
The value of the business is a going concern. Because he was put out of business, right?
That, Your Honor, yes, the value of the business, and the other way is the actual profits he would have gained during that entire time from the initial fraud.
He seeks both treble damages under RICO and also punitive damages. Is he entitled to both? On what authority is he entitled to both?
With respect to fraud, yes. With respect to RICO, I believe he's entitled to triple damages. I would have to look at it. But Your Honor, with respect to damages, we won't mind limiting the damages if he's not entitled to all of it. We just want to get to the trial. Thank you. Your Honors, if I may, I respectfully disagree with the lower court's interpretation and some commentators, a lot of them, that say that the Taylor versus the Federal National Mortgage Company and the Long versus Shore Bank Development Company stands for the proposition that this court believes fraud is not an exception to the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine. That's erroneous.
Counsel,
because
I must say that I don't see how there can be exceptions to a doctrine the Supreme Court has created. The Supreme Court said the basis of the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine is that only the Supreme Court of the United States can review the judgments of state court in civil cases. Fraud doesn't have anything to do with the rationale of Rooker-Feldman. Right. It's just a reason for thinking the state court judgment is wrong. And the Supreme Court has said that all your reasons for thinking a state court judgment is wrong have to go to the Supreme Court and not the inferior federal judiciary. Right? You're basically disagreeing with the premise of the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine, and that's not something an inferior court is supposed to do.
You know, I was going to explain why your comments are correct with respect to the specific facts within these two cases, but we're in agreement here, Your Honor. And I was going to go on to the Johnson case and explain where this goes. So I don't think there's a disagreement with us here, Your Honor. The other thing I want to point out, Your Honor, the Congress created the diversity jurisdiction statute. And when they did that, what they had in mind was that state courts may not be fair or impartial to someone from the outside. And again, I agree with you, Judge, the statute should take precedent, and this is a diversity jurisdiction case.
I thought it was a federal question case.
Yeah. Well, that federal question case is problematic, Your Honors. The Rooker-Feldman Doctrine may stand or not.
I'm now totally lost. This is a RICO case. What do you mean federal question jurisdiction is problematic?
Well, Your Honor, it's two causes of actions. One is the fraud, and the other, which is based on diversity, and the other one is the RICO as well. So that is a federal question. Yes, Your Honor. I do agree on that. There are many cases that this court put out that, as I said, the district court judge and many commentators seem to hold the view that this court doesn't believe that the fraud is an exception to the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine. And I think we're in agreement that they're wrong. Yes. Unless you have any other questions for me, Your Honors, I think that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Salem.
Thank you.
Mr. Salem, counsel sits at counsel table.
Excuse me, Your Honor. If it pleases the court,
I would like to ask you the same question I asked to Mr. Salem, but I'd like to ask you an antecedent question, which is, do you think the doctrine of res judicata, or claim preclusion, forecloses this RICO suit?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, why?
And why, yeah.
All right, because this is clearly a direct attack on decisions that were made in the state court. In 2008, my client filed suit for failure to pay for gas. This is the same gasoline that he now claims was part of the fraud.
Counsel.
Yes.
Could a RICO claim have been, was it a compulsory counterclaim?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It arises out of the same transaction or occurrence. We're talking about the same gasoline. We're talking about the loss of the...
And could you help me understand what the compulsory counterclaim doctrine is? Is it the same as federal, and then you could tell me whether RICO has ever been deemed a compulsory counterclaim in federal practice.
I do not know the answer of whether it's been deemed in federal practice. In the state of Indiana...
I would be very surprised. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would be very surprised if there were a federal foreclosure action. And there are lots. There are actually more federal foreclosure actions than any other thing on the district court's docket. I would be very surprised if RICO were a compulsory counterclaim. If it's not, then presumably res judicata wouldn't apply. And I have some difficulty seeing how the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine applies, on res judicata it doesn't. There's some overlap between the two, but maybe I'm completely wrong about res judicata.
Well, Your Honor, this is, and to get into the procedural history of the case a little bit, in 2008 was the action on the lawsuit for the failure to pay for gas. That is the same facts which Mr. Iqbal now claims was where
If I understand his argument, it is that that's not true. His argument is that there is an extrinsic conspiracy to defraud him, which is different from his failure to pay for gas, or is anterior to his failure to pay for gas.
Well,
and it seems to me that it then at least is logically possible that the foreclosure is proper, the state judgment is proper, because indeed he didn't pay for gas, but that the consequences of a conspiracy to defraud him would nonetheless be actionable.
If I may follow up, he seems to concede that the state court judgments are valid, but he seeks to recover compensation for the fraud that led to the state court entering these judgments against him. And, you know, that seems to be allowed by the Johnson case, you know, Johnson versus Pushpin.
Well, I believe that without the state court actions, he would have never lost his gas station. He would have never gone out of business. So to say that the state court actions are not the direct cause of the injury is incorrect. It is exactly what he's complaining about. He's claiming that
he's not contesting the debt in this action. He's not contesting the foreclosure. He's alleging a conspiracy to steal his business under two different legal theories, RICO and a common law fraud theory, with a different measure of damages. There's a problem in that he asked for the property back, but yeah. that's just sort
And the other measure of damages is from the loss of the business, which again is a result
that's
from the state court.
That's not what the state court cases were about. The cases were about a debt for gas delivered and not paid for. And a foreclosure action. He's not contesting either of those. He's suing for the theft of his business.
Yes.
Your guys conspired to do.
And Patel wasn't a party in the state court litigation, was he?
No, but he could have been. He could have made him a party.
But there's no state court judgment involving Patel, correct?
That is correct. But he could have been added as a party if he had sought. He's a resident of the county where the lawsuit was brought. I believe this argument really is the same as in the other foreclosure actions where people claim that there's been a fraud and involved in their handling of their mortgage and they lose their house. I do think that this court's decisions in the line of foreclosure cases, which it is uniformly found Rooker-Feldman barred reconsideration, are exactly on point. Because, again, his whole claim is that we used the state court to defraud him. That was the tool. Without that, nothing would have happened. He would have not lost his gas station. He would not have lost his business. And so he's claiming an injury that directly flows from the decisions of the state court. And that's exactly, I think, what the same decisions of this court in the foreclosure area under Rooker-Feldman have determined.
That's why I asked the particular question I did to Mr. Salem. Is it possible for him to recover while the state judgment remains valid and outstanding?
I don't think so. Because First of all, res judicata should apply because it was a claim that he that arises out of the very same facts and circumstances.
If res judicata applies, then that can be pleaded as an affirmative defense. It won't be jurisdictional. The reason I asked that question initially of you is because it seems to depend on the proposition that RICO was a compulsory counterclaim. But let's just stick with Rooker-Feldman, jurisdictional doctrine that's not quite the same as res judicata. In your view, you've told me that you think that Iqbal can't prevail while the judgment remains valid and outstanding. And I'd like you to explain why.
Because the damages that he claims all flow as a direct result from and negate the decision of the state court in finding that we had proper grounds to have a foreclosure sale.
How does it negate the foreclosure to obtain a recovery for fraudulently putting him out of business? In other words, obtain damages for the value of his business.
I think
it doesn't call into question the foreclosure judgment. The foreclosure judgment flowed from the nonpayment of the gas.
That can
remain of record and stand as is, and he can obtain damages for the value of the business.
Because if there wasn't a valid he claims the debt wasn't valid, in essence, by claiming that
That's
he was defrauded into this.
No, he's claiming that.
But he has
to. Defendants conspired to and concocted this scheme to put him out of business, which consisted of defaulting on the payment of gas.
And he claims that the method of that was they conspired to not have the gas paid for.
Right, but that doesn't contest the nonpayment. There's clearly a nonpayment. He's not alleging there was not a nonpayment. And that triggered the foreclosure when that debt was not paid. And he's not challenging that.
Perhaps I'm being thick on this, but it seems to me that if for him to contend that the underlying obligations, he is attacking the underlying obligations that were the foundation for both the 2008 judgment and the 2010 judgment, and that he had an obligation under Indiana law to raise defenses that his RICO claims would have been affirmative defenses under Indiana law that he was required to raise. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Anything further, Mr. Salem?
Your Honor, unless the court has any questions, I have nothing else.
I don't see any questions. Thank you very much.
The case
is taken under advisement.
Thank you.
The court will now be in recess.